Comes in chapters 25 and 24, 5, and 6. Govardhan Leela, everybody knows. So after the Govardhan Leela, Krishna put the hill back down and everyone had a big festival in honor of Nanda Maharaj and Krishna. And when they were preparing for the festival, they started, there's a whole chapter. 26 called Wonderful Krishna. And the elders had a little elder get together and they were starting to speculate, who is he? And they started reciting his pastimes. He did this wonderful, that wonderful, this wonderful. And we learned about there's primary rasa and secondary rasas. According to the Vedic teaching, bhakti teachings, primary rasas are neutrality, shanta, servitorship, dasya, friendship, sakya rasa, parental affection, vatsalya rasa, and conjugal rasa, madhurya rasa. And so these five primary rasas have many, many, many subdivisions. And then there's seven secondary rasas, one of which is astonishment. And the nature of the secondary rasas is that it enriches the primary rasa. It becomes so prominent that the primary rasa seems to be in the background and the primary rasa is in the foreground. And astonishment is one of them. towards the object, Krishna. So they saw the Govardhan Leela, and when they were in the midst of it, they were just absorbed in the Leela. They were in ecstasy for 24/7. And then, when it was over, they started considering, who is he? So they went to Nanda Maharaj and said, you're our king, and tell us who is your son. Because we have feelings for him like he's our own son. We all have the same feeling, and so what's going on? So Nanda spoke about what he heard from Garga Muni, in the royal family, was a super excellent astrologer. So he did the name-giving ceremony for Krishna in a cowshed in Mathura. And he spoke 8 verses, and so Nanda spoke those 8 verses to them, saying, basically, his conclusion was, he's my son, but he's been invested with powers like Narayan. He will have powers like Narayan. He didn't say he's Narayan. Didn't say he wasn't either. So and he'll protect the residents of Braja. So take good care of him. He said many other things. So they went about their business. They had a big festival, and life in Braja resumed. They kind of like met it. Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill kind of recede into the background, and they just got into being with Krishna and doing their living their lives as cowherds. So we became so much interested in that we went back to where he spoke those verses, which is chapter 8, which is what we're discussing. So the chapter 8, quickly, Krishna is born in, earlier chapters. So then, as a small baby, here comes Putana, and he kills Putana. He's just a few days old. And then in 3 weeks old, he kills Shakatasura, the cart demon. And then within the first 45 days is the name-giving ceremony. He's still a little baby, he's 45 days old. And then his little infant pastimes, his crawling, and that's very nice. And his learning to talk, that's really cute. His learning to toddle, and that's really interesting. But way before child development tells that a child would begin to walk, he was walking with Balaram because they were about the same age developmentally. And then when they started walking, they would go about Braja, and the cowherd men would just see them, they become stunned because he's the personality of Godhead and they're pure devotees. And they had these parental feelings for him that was just, so it describes the parental affection. And then the wives of the cowherd men, and then what Krishna would do with the wives. Pull their hair and pull their sari and go steal in the kitchen and go steal in stealing the mukhan shorlinga. And then they would go, there's like lots of detail. And it's really nice. And so then they would go to Mother Jasoda's home, and in a loving and laughing way, they would complain, your son does this, and he's right there listening. And then he does this, and she'd say, well, why don't you just, if he wants to steal, just give him. They said, we tried to give him, he won't take it, he wants to steal. He has this compulsion, he's got to steal. And on. If he sees we're in the kitchen, he'll let the calves free. So then they go, before milking times, they go to the cows. We have to go take care of the calves, get them secured. And then he comes into the kitchen and steals. And if he doesn't find anything in the kitchen to steal, then he goes into the back room and pinches the babies and makes them cry and runs away. He's all over the place being mukhan short. And Mother Jasoda looks at him and says, why do you do it like this? And his eyes are fearful, moving this way and that way and trembling, and she just embraces him. So the commentary says he actually wanted that affection of being scolded. It's a devotee that he likes. And she didn't scold him, she just embraced him. So he did something that would, she would scold him for. He ate dirt. He knew that that would get it. So he didn't eat, whether he ate dirt or didn't eat dirt, the cowherd boys said to Mother Jasoda's eating dirt, and he said, they're liars. He said, why would they lie? They're not your enemies. They're your friends, and there's your elder brother, Balaram. It's, you know, there's something to this. And he said, if you don't believe me, you look in my mouth. So she looked in his mouth, and she saw what she saw. And this was second time. Another time earlier, shortly after his birth, he yawned. A little child yawning, picture it in your mind. And she looked, and she saw the same thing. So this has lots of detail and detail and detail. It's pretty amazing. Within him, she saw everything. I mean, Arjuna saw the universal form in all directions, and she saw the form of the universe in his mouth. He's a little boy. Just really little. Anyway, the planets and the mountains and the seas and everything. She even saw herself looking inside Krishna's mouth, inside Krishna's mouth. And Nanda Maharaj and Govardhan Hill and everything. You know, circuit overload. So then she went through some stages. This is important. It comes right to where we're going to read next. She wanted to process what she had just experienced. So she considered, am I dreaming? She ruled that out. Is this a feature of Maya, of the demigods? No, I'm too insignificant for the demigods to bother showing some feature of Maya. Am I deranged? Have I gone mad? No, I'm quite normal. Maybe it's some mystic power. Maybe it's those powers that Garga Muni spoke about, that the powers of Narayan that invested my son. So she went in that direction, like speculating, philosophizing, what's going on here. And then she went into a mood of detachment. Now, Acharya says, like sometimes people have this like peak spiritual experience, and then they get really detached from the world for a little while. And then back to business as usual. So, you know, he's not my son, and I'm not the wife of Nanda, and not the queen of the people of Raja, and I'm just a servant of Narayan. And then she has prayers where she's glorifying Narayan in three different ways, and then finally appeals to Narayan to please protect my son. And the explanation is given that Krishna wanted scolding, which he got, but now she's going off away from, you know, he wanted to be cuddled by her, and he wanted her motherly affection. So he covered her with his yoga maya, so she would forget what she saw. And mission accomplished, now please forget what you saw. And so she goes deeply into this mood of motherly affection, which is natural for her, because it's Mother Jasoda. And there's pages and pages and pages and pages and pages of commentary about parental affection and the unique degree of parental affection that Mother Jasoda has. And then he finishes, Sukadeva finishes the narration, and Maharishi Pariksit goes, wow. Who can say what austerities and what in previous lifetimes she underwent and Nanda Maharaj underwent, in order to have such affection for Krishna that they have? He says, in the, you know, there, he goes through sequentially different portions of the Vedas. There's degrees of understanding, hierarchies of understanding of the Supreme, and Mother Jasoda's at the top because she doesn't, she's past all those things. It says, Krishna is my son. She's superlative. This is, Shukadev says like that, and Maharaj Pariksit goes, wow. And so, in response to that question, there's two verses, questions of Maharaj Pariksit. How did they achieve this position? He speaks about Drona and Dara. You ever heard of their names before? Drona and Dara. So we had this discussion last night. And I'll just give a quickie and then I'll read. Who are Drona and Dara? How does this fit in? The really quick is Yasoda and Nanda. They didn't become Yasoda and Nanda. No one can become Yasoda and Nanda. They're eternally situated in parental affection. They're not even jivas. They're shakti. They are shakti tattva. There's Vishnu tattva. There's living entities, jiva tattva. And then there's these other entities like goddess of fortune, she's shakti tattva. Nanda and Yashoda, they're in this other, it's Krishna's own shakti. They're not, it's not a post that somebody can occupy eternally, mother and father in Braja. And they're gifted with just this immeasurable parental affection. And Krishna loves that and they love him in that way. It's mutual. And so that we're going to read. But the Narayana part of the narration is, Narayana requested them, or instructed them, make expansions of yourselves to reside in the heavenly realm. So Nanda expanded himself as Drona, who became a resident in the heavenly realm amongst the Vasus, like Grandfather Bhishma before was a Vasu. And it's in the heavenly realm. And Drona, his wife, was an expansion of Mother Yashoda. So there's Krishna appears in Vrindavan once in the day of Brahma, and each day of Brahma there's 1,000 yuga cycles, so it's really special when Krishna appears. It means there's 999 other ones where Krishna doesn't go to Vrindavan. It's Krishna appears as Vasudeva Krishna, the son of Vasudeva Devaki. And once in a day of Brahma, he appears as Swami Bhagavan Krishna, the son of Nanda and Yashoda, and has his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. Very special. And it's very specific. It's on the 28th yuga cycle of Vaivasvata Manu, who's Manu number 7 out of 14. It's like very, very clear. He's really regulated when he appears in Braja. So this time around, Drona and Dara in the heavenly realm, they very much had a desire to have the personality of Godhead as their son. When it was time for Krishna's appearance, they had that desire. They approached Brahma. Brahma smiled and gave them the blessing. You will have Krishna as your son. So when it came time for Krishna's appearance, the unmanifest pastimes, the eternal and unmanifest pastimes of Krishna became manifest in this world. Nanda and Yashoda took their birth. They had their mother, they had their father, there's details we can describe. And then Drona and Dara, who the Sanskrit word is angsa, or fragmental expansions, or fragmental portions of Nanda Yashoda, they expanded themselves and entered into the bodies of Nanda Yashoda. So that means when Krishna performs his pastimes, not kind of like a dual personality, but the expansions of themselves were manifest within. And when Krishna's pastimes were finished, Krishna did the following things. Krishna arranged for the pastimes to become uprakat. That is, the world could not see them anymore. They're eternally going on, but they're now unmanifest instead of manifest. And the forms that had been forming manifest pastimes, according to Padma Purana, they were sent into Vaikuntha Vimana to Goloka in the spiritual realm. Because the one that's here is a... Anyway, it's the same, non-different than, but they sent them to Goloka. And Krishna then went back to Dwarka to wrap up his Dwarka pastimes. Like, pastimes over. So the personalities that were there. So when this happened, according to Padma Purana, is after Krishna killed Shishupal, right? Then another relative of Shishupal, also envious of Krishna, was Dantavakra. So Krishna went and killed Dantavakra. And the place where Krishna killed Dantavakra is just outside the city gate of Mathura. Because he was part of the royal family, part of the big dynasty of royal family, Dantavakra. And was one of the giant Vijay. Last time around, they went back to the spiritual world. From that, after killing Dantavakra, what did Krishna do? According to Padma Purana, he left his royal attire, accepted Brijvasi cowherd boy attire, and went to Vrindavan and spent 3 months in Vrindavan. For two main purposes. One, pacifying the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan that were feeling too much separation from him. And two, he wound up their pastimes. And winding up their pastimes meant included Drona and Dara were sent back to their heavenly kingdom. Pretty complex, huh? Now, yesterday evening, he asked a question, which his wife asked again this morning. And I didn't have the answer yesterday evening or this morning, but now I do. And the question was, just as Nanda and Yasoda, they're eternally in Goloka, are Vasudeva and Devaki eternally in Mathura? And my answer this morning and yesterday evening was, I haven't read anything that says clearly one way or the other, so I can't say. But then I found some things that say it very clearly. So I'm going to read those things. Is anybody lost? Should I go over any of this again, or it's clear? It's clear.
Actually, I almost had that question, that what happened to them? Why Krishna, you hear the story that Krishna never went back to Vrindavan, so... There was always a question, why didn't he go back?
Well, there's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons,
right,
is there were still demons on the planet. Krishna knew if I show my affection for the resident Vrindavan, they'll be harassed by the demons that are on the planet. I have to take care of the demons on the planet first. So he sent Uddhava. And then later Balaram went. And there's other details, but that's one of the answers. There's different answers too besides that. But the question from last night to this morning is, Nanda and Yasoda are they're eternally perfect beings, they're eternally with Krishna in Vrindavan, in Goloka, in the spiritual world. So the spiritual world has these parts, Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. They're all eternal. Dwarka manifested itself, and then after some time, Krishna was withdrawn. Now there's archaeological remains showing, but you know, the abundance of personalities and activities and opulence, etc., the spiritual opulences of Dwarka was withdrawn. It was an island in the midst of the sea and so on. But it's the eternal abode of the Supreme Lord, Dwarka, and Mathura. So in the spiritual in Krishna Loka, there's Mathura, and our Vasudeva Devaki there. As Nanda and Yasoda are in Vrindavan. That was the question. So here's the answer. This is Rupa Goswami writings in a book called Lagu Bhagavatamrita describing avatars of Krishna. When we observe Krishna Janmashtami every year, one of the things we hear every year, is Mother Earth was overburdened with demoniac kings. So Mother Earth went to demigods, demigods went to Brahma, and they all went to the shore of the Milk Ocean. And they offered prayers, the Purusha Sukta prayers, to the Supreme Lord, help and protect. So Brahma Brahma, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Brahma heard within his heart a message from Vishnu. Vishnu said, I will appear on earth very soon. Please instruct the demigods that they should appear on earth first. Yes? So Brahma informed the demigods, expansions of yourselves should appear on earth to assist Krishna in his pastimes. And they'll come. So they did. On the order of Brahma, various things happened. When the portions of the devatas, through the order of Brahma, appeared on earth, the portions of Vasudeva and other angsas such as Kashyapa who were residing in Swarga, angsas, that's this tiny portion. So Vasudeva and Krishna exist, Vasudeva and Devaki exist in Goloka, in Mathura, portion of Goloka. They have their partial expansions existing in Swarga. Kashyapa is a partial expansion of Vasudeva, and Drona is a partial expansion of Nanda, existing in Swarga. One is Drona is a Vasu, and Kashyapa is Kashyapa, one of the sons of Brahma. They merged with Vasudeva and others, who were their Angsi, of the eternal pastimes, and took birth from Shurasena. Shurasena is the father of Vasudeva. Shurasena, we'll read. Who is Shurasena? How many is Shurasena? Shurasena was the father of Vasudeva, but he had a brother. And his brother's name was Parjanya, who was the father of Nanda. You follow me? Shurasena was the father of Vasudeva, Parjanya was the father of Nanda. Both brothers, Shurasena and Parjanya, were sons of Deva Nidha. Shurasena had 10 sons. Vasudeva was the chief of his 10 sons. If you get absorbed, your pain will, pain won't go away, but you'll just be.
That's okay, I'm good.
Okay. Vasudeva was the chief of his 10 sons. And of course, he had some daughters. One of those daughters was Pritha, but he gave his daughter to his dear friend King Kuntibhoja, who raised him as his daughter, and he named her Kunti. So Kunti and Vasudeva were brother and sister. The Pandavas and Krishna were first cousins. One of the other 10 sons of Vasudeva, of Shurasena, was Devabhaga. Devabhaga was the father of Uddhava. So Uddhava and Krishna were first cousins.
Who's Uddhava?
Huh? Uddhava is the one that Krishna sent with the message for the gopis. As there's Bhagavad Gita, there's Uddhava Gita and the Bhagavatam. Uddhava was with Krishna's constant companion when he was in Mathura. He sent him as an emissary. And then when Krishna went to Dwaraka, he's the most intimate person to Krishna outside of Braja, even more than Arjuna. He even looked like Krishna. When Uddhava came to Vrindavan with Krishna's message, they thought, Krishna came. Then they got disappointed. Oh, not Krishna. But his intimacy with Krishna was such that even everything, he knew Krishna's heart. He appears many, many places in the Bhagavatam, in Dwaraka. And then Krishna's final instructions before leaving this world was Uddhava Gita. You'll find that in 11th canto, 17 chapters. It's really detailed. Uddhava. And then again in the 3rd canto, where he's instructing Vidura. So, this Uddhava. Intimate. So here's from Gopal Champu, this is a writing of Jiva Goswami. Devamida, who personified all the best qualities of the Yadu dynasty, who is praised in all the Shrutis and Puranas, lived in Mathura. The best of Kshatriyas had 2 wives. One was of a Kshatriya family and the other was of a Vaishya family. They bore 2 children, named Shurasena and Parjanya. Shurasena produced Vasudeva and others. Parjanya, because of his mixed parentage, became a Vaishya and worked with cows. He lived in Mahavan. From his childhood, Parjanya would worship the Brahmanas just on seeing them and gave them everything to fulfill their desires. He was affectionate to them as Vaishnavas. He carried out activities to the best of his knowledge and worshipped Vishnu his whole life. His mother's family was the praiseworthy ornament of the Vaishya community. The wise glorified the mother's family by calling them Abhira, means mixed Brahmin and Vaishya. And because of that, her family line had attained excellence. So, Parjanya had 5 sons. The eldest was Upananda, and the middle one was Nanda. And when it came time to pass on the throne for Parjanya, he wanted to give it to Upananda, who said, actually, my name means the father of Nanda, and he's the best qualified one, so he should become the king. So Nanda became the king, king of the cowherds, king of Raja. So, Nanda, Parjanya, Devamida. And from Devamida, Shurasena and Parjanya. And Shurasena, then Vasudev. And so Vasudev and Nanda were family and very affectionate, naturally so. So Vasudev, that the main point of reading all this is Vasudev is eternally existing. He's eternally existing in Krishna Loka, in the Mathura portion of Krishna Loka. And he, Vasudev, has a angsa or partial expansion in the heavenly realm, Kashyapa. And when it came time for Krishna's appearance on earth, Kashyapa expanded a portion of himself to enter into Vasudev in the earthly realm. Okay? It's a little high technology, but... Krishna's giving everyone... His nature is he's very loving. And those that have loving regard for him, he reciprocates according to their loving regard for him. But what we're hearing, so the main thing that we're hearing in this section is the unparalleled, unequaled position of Nanda and Yasoda. I mean, because later is going to come, you know, the gopis, the young gopis. But amongst the gopas, the elder gopas and gopis, Nanda and Yasoda's age, they're just followers of Nanda and Yasoda. Not just because they're king and queen, but because they're at the pinnacle of parental affection for the personality of Godhead. Our acharyas say, just a little, comparing the love of Devaki to the love of Mother Yasoda. Mother Devaki, when Krishna appears, she offers prayers and prayers and prayers and prayers to the personality of Godhead, and Yasoda never did that. She says, Krishna is my son. He showed his divinity, Krishna is my son. So the love is different because this love of Vrindavan is such that it's so strong when it eclipses divinity or Aishwarya. He shows his Aishwarya, it's like just covered over by their love. It's so strong in intimate manner. And the elders, they, Mother Yasoda, Devaki breastfed Krishna, according to our acharyas, that one evening before Vasudeva took him to the side of Mother Yasoda as Krishna asked. And that was it. And Mother Yasoda had that motherly opportunity all the time. And the others in Braja, for 1 year Krishna appeared as their son. So they fed their child for that 1 year. But Mother Yasoda had Krishna even during that 1 year and all other times. Because her love, not just she was more fortunate, but her love is so special. When she was thinking, who is this boy? She said, no, he can't be God, because even just a moment when he can't see me, he gets very agitated and he's calling out for me and says, I have to come and hold him. And I feel the same towards him, so this isn't God. No, to throw that away. Because the love is, you know, and his love for her is like that too. At the same time, he's going back and forth between showing his yogamaya and withdrawing his yogamaya and doing all kinds of things with his potencies for his pleasure and her pleasure, because her pleasure is his pleasure. It's this crescendo of loving exchange in the spiritual world. And the 10th canto is the mature fruit of the first 9 cantos, so to understand it really helps to have the earlier cantos understood nicely. So now I'm just going to read, here's the text 46 that we've been discussing. This is Prabhupada's translation and purport. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Yashoda, Prakshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, "Oh, learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda, her breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love?" And Prabhupada's purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukrita norjana. Without sukriti or pious activities, no one can come to the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is approached by four kinds of pious men. This is the other half of that verse. Arto jigyasu artarti gyani cha. That's four. But here we see that Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda surpassed all of them. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, quote, "What kind of pious activities did they perform in their past lives by which they achieved such a stage of perfection?" Of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda are accepted as the father and mother of Krishna, yet Mother Yashoda was more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, because Nanda Maharaj was sometimes separated from Krishna, whereas Yashoda, Krishna's mother, was not separated from Krishna for any moment, at any moment. From Krishna's boyhood to his childhood, and from his childhood to his youth, Mother Yashoda was always in association with Krishna. Even when Krishna was grown up, listen to this one. Even when Krishna was grown up, he would go to Vrindavan and sit on the lap of Mother Yashoda. I don't know what that means. That's Prabhupada's purport. Therefore, there is no comparison to the fortune of Mother Yashoda, and Parikshit Maharaj naturally inquired, Yashoda cha mahabhaga. And we, by mistake, I read this morning, but we're going to read it again. Shukadeva Goswami comments, just after the appearance of Krishna, this is chapter 5. When Krishna appeared as his son, Nanda Maharaj, fully devoted, was overwhelmed by jubilation. After bathing and purifying himself and dressing properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child, according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for worship of the devatas and forefathers. That's a verse from chapter 5, canto 10. This verse illustrates how Nanda's name literally means, quote, "He who gives joy to the universe." The word "tu," which means "but," indicates that the fortune of Nanda, with his pure parental affection, was superior than to that of Vasudeva, with conceptions of Krishna's powers. This description continues until verse 19. Prakshit also praises him in two verses. So now, the previous section, which I read yesterday and day before, is glorification of Yashoda. But the verse speaks of Yashoda and Nanda, so here's Nanda's glories. Here's Prakshit praising him. O learned Brahmana, Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Lord, but past auspicious activity did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection and ecstatic love? Then, although Krishna was so pleased with Vasudeva and Devaki that he descended as their son, they could not enjoy Krishna's magnanimous childhood pastimes, which are so great that simply by chanting about them vanquishes the contamination of the material world. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, however, enjoyed these pastimes fully, and therefore their position is always better than that of Vasudeva and Devaki. That's friction. Earlier in chapter 2 of Canto, this is the prayers of the demigods chapter, while Krishna is still in the womb. Thus the Supreme Lord, who is the supersoul of all living entities and who vanquishes all the fear of his devotees, entered the mind of Vasudeva in full opulence. Thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, the full opulence of the Supreme Lord, who is all auspicious for the entire world, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Devaki became beautiful by carrying Krishna, joy to all beings, appearing on his own, just as the east becomes beautified by carrying the rising moon. In this manner, Krishna appeared in Nanda and Yashoda as well. For the Lord to appear as the highest goal, complete absorption in the Lord is necessary with intense prema, as the following quotations illustrate. I'm not going to read them all. This is Madhvacharya's commentary on Vedanta Sutra 3358. Bhakti brings one to the Lord and shows the Lord. Or another reference, this is Uddhava Gita, Canto 11, Chapter 14. Krishna says, only by bhakti with full faith can the devotees obtain me. Paragraph. This is shown in Narada's previous life and the histories of Dhruva and Prahlad. According to the following logic, tat kratu nyaya, one who thinks what one thinks one becomes. Similarly, the Gita says, yetamam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyaham, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Thus, this is the conclusion, a particular manifestation of the Lord will depend upon a particular type of worship. Nanda and Yashoda's particular type of bhakti will be described in Brahma's prayers later. That's chapter 14, we're still in chapter 3. Nanda is described as Mahamana, or one whose mind was in Krishna to an extreme degree. It can also mean one whose mind fully capable of meditating on Krishna. It is said, quote, the devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities in that person who has pure bhakti for the Lord. There are no good qualities in the non-devotee who chases after temporary material objects with the desire for material pleasure. According to the statement, Nanda's absorption in Krishna was his main quality, and all other qualities, like generosity, were included in it. The description also represents the nature of Yashoda, which we just discussed, this text 46. Though both Nanda and Yashoda and Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to Krishna, one can judge the nature of the cause by the results. Vasudeva and Devaki saw the four-armed Lord, and Nanda and Yashoda saw the two-armed Lord. It's very interesting, next paragraph. The word, quote, being born, describe an external appearance. The Lord is never born like a material person. This aspect was the same in both couples. There is a difference in his appearing as their son. He appeared to Nanda and Yashoda in the form of their son. But he did not appear in this manner to Vasudeva Devaki. That was suitable because Nanda and Yashoda's love was pure parental affection and was very strong. Vasudeva and Devaki were covered by knowledge of the Lord's greatness. This is revealed in their previous statement. This is, again, Canto 10, Chapter 3. I know you directly as the Supreme Person beyond material existence, as the impersonal Brahman, as Parama and Bhagavan. They knew his divinity, but Nanda and Yashoda, that wasn't the case. Without that parental affection, the Lord cannot be called the son. Varaha came from Brahma's nostril, but is not called his son. Krishna came out of Uttara's womb after protecting Parikshit, but is not called her son. Similarly, Vasudeva and Devaki did not regard the four-armed form as their son. However, Krishna appeared with all his expansions as the son of Nanda. This conception is shown in Nanda's action as he called the Brahmanas to perform ceremonies. Garga also states that Krishna is principally Nanda's son when he says, previously he was sometimes the son of Vasudeva. That means in previous yuga cycles. Brahma also praised Krishna in his prayers, chapter 14, after Brahma Vimohan Lila. Right?
Which is
stealing the calves and cowherd boys. And then Brahma goes, wow. And then offers prayers to Krishna. And his first prayer says, I offer respects to Krishna, born from the body of the cowherd Nanda. We're almost done. I'm getting carried away here a little bit.
We're enjoying.
It's okay?
Yes, yes.
Nanda okay. Knew that the Krishna was actually Vasudeva's son, though, right? I mean, he brought him from the jail.
Okay. I'm going to tell you a secret that our acharyas told me. When Mother Yashoda, it says, it's in several different ways. When the seventh son of Devaki was in the womb of Devaki, Krishna called Mother Yashoda, Krishna called Yogamaya. Yes, service. What is it? I have three services. What's that? In the womb of Devaki is the seventh child. Transfer the seventh child from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, Balaram. Mm-hmm. And next service. Appear as the child, the daughter of Yashoda. Next service. I'm going to appear as the eighth child of Devaki and have the eighth child of Devaki taken by my father, Vasudeva, placed by the side of Yashoda, and take you back here to the prison house of Kamsa. And he's going to try to kill you, but don't worry, because you're my Yogamaya, he can't kill you. And then after that happens, you'll be known throughout the land by various names of Durga. So you're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Meanwhile, over in Gokul, Mother Yashoda gave birth to twins. And the first of those children born was Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, two-armed form of Krishna, who appeared in the prison of the Kamsa as Vasudeva Krishna. Devaki made this interesting prayer at the end. When Kamsa comes to know the eighth child of Devaki has been born, you know what he's going to do. He's going to come here and try to kill you. So if you can please assume a little childlike form. I mean, she says, he's the personality of God. She said the whole thing. He showed it, everything. He's going to come and try to kill you. So could you assume a childlike form? We can maybe hide you somewhere in the prison house. That makes sense? It's quite irrational, isn't it? But it's her maternal affection. And she was inspired like that by Krishna. So as she was inspired like that, Krishna assumed a childlike form. But it was a two-armed form. That two-armed form was what was carried in the mind of Yashoda, transferred to the mind of Devaki, or to the child Krishna. That's a two-armed form that was carried. And when that two-armed form is Vasudeva Krishna, the son of Vasudeva is Vasudeva Krishna, the male child entered into the body of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and the female child is what Vasudeva took back to the prison house of Kamsa. And the younger of the two was Yogamaya.
So Yashoda never had another, she didn't have a child?
Krishna and Yogamaya.
They were twins.
But there was...
She wants to know, were there other children after the twins?
So there was nobody who was born from Yashoda.
No, the twins were born. Krishna and Yogamaya.
Yogamaya were born to Yashoda.
Now she accepted something I've not figured out yet. She accepted Rohini was one of the wives of Vasudeva. So she accepted Balaram like her son.
Mm-hmm.
And Balaram accepted Yashoda like his mother, although Rohini was his mother. And then when they went to Dwarka, there's Subhadra.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes into the picture somehow, and I'm not sure how that somehow is, but I'll track it down. Because brother and sister. Now, Balaram, he wasn't the biological son of Yashoda.
Mm-hmm.
She is the son of Rohini. So exactly how it is that Subhadra is the sister of Krishna and Balaram, I don't have the answer to, but I'll find out. I'm sure our acharyas have explained it. I don't, at the moment, know. But it may be like Balaram was not her biological son, but they were like brothers. And so I don't know what the deal is with Subhadra. Maybe Yogamaya came as the younger sister. Maybe that's it. And let's see what our acharyas say. I'll check it out once I know. I'll provide him a copy and he can send you a copy. Just like this, what I read from, he has a copy. And he'll forward to all of you so you can go over it again and scratch your head a few times and sort it out.
So she didn't know, Yashoda didn't know, so they sneaked out the baby from the girl child.
What our acharyas say was she was so exhausted she didn't recognize what happened. She didn't know. And Vasudeva didn't wake her up and say, guess what, I'm taking your female child. He was just following instructions, what Krishna said.
Yeah.
So he did what Krishna said.
Hmm.
And what our acharyas say is when they Vasudeva and Devaki thought, this is Yasoda's child. So when Kamsa tried to come to kill the child, they protested vigorously. I mean, in addition to what any decent person would do. But it's Yashoda's child. That's how they thought. It's all pastime. It's just like this intrigue, you know, it's better than a Sherlock Holmes story or something.
Yes. Mystery.
Yeah, there's so many mysteries.
Yes. And many versions sometimes you hear from different...
Therefore, I like that our acharyas have given us... And then my experience is when they say something, it's their scriptural authority for their saying what they say. Mm-hmm. And they know how to select from something that's not so authentic from things that are authentic. So I just feel safe.
Yes.
I'm at the feet of our great acharyas, and there's... I don't have to worry.
This is the first time I heard of the Drona story mentioned. I never knew about that.
Mm-hmm. After Maharishi Pariksit asks this question, Shukadeva Goswami starts telling the Drona and Dara story.
Yes.
And that's chapter 8. In the beginning of chapter 9, he goes, wait a minute. He didn't say it like that, but... Nanda Yasoda, they're eternally his mother and father. So how somebody become Nanda and Yasoda? Because they're eternally the mother and father. And then it carries on. They actually are his eternal mother and father. And then the Drona and Dara become merged with him. Because they're partial expansions of him and her. But because their love is so special. And that their love is the Damodar Lila. Or her love, particularly. She gets special... attention by Shukadeva Goswami, and her love is so special. Special, special. So any discussion? We've gone over an hour already. He's going to check and see if there's online. But in the room, is there anything here you'd like to discuss about this?
So you're saying Drona and Dara left to which they are the expansion of
partial Yashoda, expansion. Partial expansion.
Partial expansion of
Nanda and Yashoda.
So once Krishna left to Dwarka, then they went back to the Vikram.
Yes, he sent them back. And it's not just them. The Vago Bhagavatamrita teaches or expresses there are many persons in the Deva realm that descended, and Krishna sent them back.
All the, like you were saying, demigods.
Demigods,
yes.
Devas.
So they were his brother or buddies, I guess.
Yes. And many such persons, the commentary says, Lago Bhagavatamrita says, this is Rupa Goswami. You know, he's up there. We don't say, hey, wait a minute. But based on scriptural authority, they had expansions of themselves descend to participate and assist Krishna in his pastime. That means they got to participate in Krishna's pastimes.
And what about Radharani?
What about
Radharani?
What about Radharani?
Oh, is
about
that another chapter?
That's coming up.
Okay.
But that comes up, but you know, she doesn't have, I don't know anything about expansions of her in the heavenly realm, but those that were her intimate associates in Vrindavan are in different categories. There's the Nitya Siddhas, and there's the sadhana siddhas, and then there's other smaller groups like the Rishi Chari Gopis. You're familiar with them, right? When Ram went to Dandak Forest, and they wished to be in a conjugal relation, not in this, but next. So Rishi, Chari, Gopis, they took part in Krishna's pastimes as Gopis. From those positions, the sages that had undergone what they had undergone for purification and had come to that stage of prema, where they wished to have that such a relation with the personality of Godhead. So they joined in Radharani's entourage. They were being trained up by the Nityasiddhas. We're always learning, even in the spiritual world.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So you had talked about the jiva tattva, kind of shakti tattva.
Yes, you're pronouncing fine.
So what's, can you explain the difference and
yeah.
how...
Sure. Let's just do the two primary that we hear, Vishnu and Jiva. The Jiva is not Vishnu and the Vishnu is not Jiva. Then there's another category. I mean, Shiva Tattva is another category. He's one of his own. There's not many of them. He's just Shiva. That's a tattva because he's neither Jiva or Vishnu. And then there's Shakti. So that's like, say, Lila Shakti, the Lord's pastime potency. That's a Shakti. It's under a category of tattva. Prithu Maharaj. You've heard his name, right?
Yes.
Prithu Maharaj's incarnation. He was bearing the Lord's ruling potency, Palana Shakti. So he was a jiva invested with the Lord's ruling potency, Palana Shakti. So it's a Shakti Vaishavatar. That the four Kumaras are bearing the Lord's Jnana Shakti. So that's a category, Shakti Tattva. It's not jiva, not Vishnu. It's a Shakti of Vishnu. It's a tattva. A category or truth about the energies of Vishnu or Krishna. So the embodiment or personification of the Lord's parental affection is Nanda Yashoda. They're Shakti tattva. Not jivas. Not opposed to somebody can become qualified and occupied.
So we say about these Krishna's pastimes that you showed on the marriage. They had come to engage or fulfill Krishna's desire to have pastimes.
Yes.
So
exactly.
But they are in itself the potency of parental
attraction. Yes. And they are so eternally. And they're doing those parental affection activities in his eternally, in his unmanifest form in this world, eternally in the spiritual world, and sometimes they become manifest in the material world. But they're eternal lila, eternally doing what they do, parental affection activities. Now the birth pastime, just even the very word time, there's no birth pastime in Goloka. But when Krishna appears, there's this very wonderful event. He appears. And there's a birth pastime. So we've been hearing about the birth pastime. At least you know, some parts of it.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
So in a spiritual world, how does Shiva come in this? I know you mentioned it, but how is...
Well, he doesn't come in the spiritual world.
Okay. I know you said that he's out of it, I guess, but how
well,
is...
His position, that the way it's described in Brahma Samhita, is by making a comparison. There's milk and there's dahi. And dahi is nothing but a milk product. Mm-hmm. But when something becomes dahi, you can't convert it back to milk. Similarly, when the glands of Mahavishnu contact pradhan, it's like milk becoming dahi. He, Lord Shiva, or Shambhu, the glands of Mahavishnu was given the name Shambhu, he contacts pradhan, and by that contact of pradhan, he then becomes known by his own tattva, like dahi is in relation to milk, his Shiva tattva. So it's only in relation to the material contact does that tattva function. It's a function of the Vedanta is searching for that which is the source of everything. And that which is the source of everything includes the tattva of Lord Shiva. But it's specific to contact of pradhan, or material nature, material energy. So when the glands of Mahavishnu contact material energy, now there's Shambhu, or Lord Shiva. Milk become yogurt. It's nothing but a milk product, but it's not milk either. So it's in his own, he's in his own tattva. So your question was, what's his function in the spiritual world? He doesn't have a function in the spiritual world. He has a function in the material world.
It's a function in the material.
And just like Lord Vishnu, or Mahavishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, Shiro Dakshaya Vishnu, they don't have a function in the spiritual world either. Their function is with material creation. They oversee material creation. That's a category of function.
So what if someone worships Shambhu? What does that mean?
What's that?
What if someone worships Shambhu? What does that mean?
What does it mean?
Yeah, what if they worship Shiva? So a lot of people worship Shiva.
What's your question? What does it mean is your question. What does it mean? What do you mean by your question?
What is their destination?
What's their destination? Is that your question?
Yes.
That's a good question. It depends on how they regard him. Some regard him as, and then you know, there's a whole big spectrum of how some people regard him. Some people regard him as the giver of whatever they want. And some people are demons. And they worship Shiva because they want things that they can use for a demoniac purpose. A classic is Vrikasura. You know the story. He wanted a benediction that he could, whoever's head he touched, their head would crack into 10 pieces.
1,000 pieces.
So he did his austerities, and he was going to cut off his head until Lord Shiva came and said, whoa, I'm Ashutosh, I'm easily pleased, what does he want? I went, okay. So then he wanted to try it on Lord Shiva. Some people worship because he gives benedictions easily. Then you know there's all kinds of in between things. You know, Ravana was a worshiper of Shiva. So there's all kinds of. It's not everybody's bad that worships Lord Shiva, but there's different gradations of. And one of the pinnacle of ideal is he's the head of a sampradaya, just like Brahma. We're in the Brahma Sampradaya, or the Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi Sampradaya, or the Kumara Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya. And he gives bhakti. So the destination depends upon the sankalpa, or the intention of the worshipper. Unfortunately, persons that are in the lower modes of nature, they like work, not everyone that worships Lord Shiva is in the lower modes of nature, but many are in the lower modes, and they worship because they have some lower modes motivation. But he, you know, so their destination is different than those that want to receive the best thing from Lord Shiva. When asked, what's the best thing? It's in one of the Puranas. Parvati asks, what's the best form of worship? Worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. And better than worship, better than best, is worship of the devotee of Vishnu. A celebrated passage. So, his worshippers' intentions are vast, big, variegated.
What if there is no desire?
No desire?
If you just worship, there is no desire.
Well, there is. That's notional, because there's always desire.
Yeah.
Desire is concomitant with the soul. Some desire. And so whatever the desire is, drives our life.
So can we ever be desire-free?
Yeah. Well, the desire-free is love. The desire of the beloved. Because we're part and parcel of the source of everything. So that which is in the source of everything, we have in a minute degree. Sit with us, intrinsic to the soul. So, desire free is free from selfish desire. But what does that leave? When selfish desire is gone, it's the desire of love, the happiness of the beloved. I don't have any selfish. When prema is achieved, there's nothing else but the beloved. And they're different. Friendship, parental affection, conjugal love, servitorship. Those are the rasas of perfection. There's desire. Pure. No mix of selfish. Okay, online. They dropped out. You said there was one.
No.
Okay.
So,
you have something?
Yeah. So, regarding the desires, I think you mentioned in morning class also that devotees, pure devotees, don't even desire for liberation or desire. So, is spiritual desire is a bad thing, or?
Spiritual desire is a good thing. Spiritual desire is a healthy state. But what's a spiritual desire? Spiritual desire is not for me. Spiritual desire is in relation to the beloved. So if it's the interest of the beloved, that's fantastic. And if it's not the interest of the beloved, no thanks.
But that point gets confusing, right? I mean, desire, when you desire something, there is a negativity to it, to a certain extent.
Well, if it's material, then it's negative. And if it's not material, then it's positive. It's of the soul, so how can you say negative?
No,
what's the natural desire of the soul? What's the soul in its natural, healthy position? What's a healthy soul? In the spiritual condition.
Desire of the being the close to the Supreme Being is what would be the desire.
Yes, being in service to the Supreme.
Yes.
So that's a desire. Isn't it?
It is. No, I understand, but I'm...
It's a spiritual desire.
It's a spiritual desire, but again, I think I'm still struggling with this. When you have that desire, then you tend to overlook things around you here. Let's say you're here, and then say what to.
Why do you tend to overlook things? Tell me. I mean, you're struggling. I want to hear what the struggle is.
I guess it comes back to going, what is our. I mean, I want to give you an example. I think we were at it was Janmashtami a couple of years ago. We were at the temple, And there was lots of chanting going on and everything was going well. So this one of the father... there was a couple, they lost their child. It was a two-year-old child.
Somewhere in the crowd got lost.
Somewhere in the crowd they got lost. And so this father literally ran through the parking lot, through the temple, screaming for his son. Actually, his son's name was Arjun also.
What happened?
So I really was disturbed by, I mean, even though there's chanting going on in the temple, he went to the temple and he wanted somebody to announce that his son is lost. They said, no, we're chanting right now. We can't do that. People's life just went on with, I mean, I understand the chanting was going on, but I somehow, that father who was screaming for help was left out.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right to me.
So my question was this is where I can say, when you said, okay, we were focused on a desire to please the Lord, but we, in that process, we forgot the basic...
Yeah, something's wrong in that picture, isn't it?
So that's where that's the point I wanted to make.
Well, the we're fallible beings. But, you know, if this was the spiritual world and Krishna was missing, everyone would stop.
Nothing stopped. I mean, everything went on and only this...
Well, okay, so we're fallible beings. So the big picture is all Mahavamsa, Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta, Sanatana. All living entities are my angsas. That word angsa there, it is again. So someone is separated from the child. What to speak of the child being separated from the parent? What to speak of the child being separated from the parent? Who knows what that child was going through, what trauma that child was going through. Let's find that child. I mean, does anybody know? So, it doesn't take, you stop the kirtan and say, this man here is separated from his child. If you know where that child is, please help him find that child so the child and the father can be connected again. It can happen. I've been through those kinds of announcements. Somebody's got their car blocking somebody, and we make an announcement.
Just a clarification. I was on the grounds. I was not in the temple room, so I don't know what happened in the temple room. But as soon as I heard somebody screaming Arjuna, Arjuna, and I actually immediately alerted the security guards at the gates to make sure that no child goes away until we figure out who this Arjun boy is. So I told the security guards at the gates to look after, and also we made the announcement in the Gauranga Hall in the cultural program, because most of the children were...
Here's the big picture. The big picture, supposing somebody actually becomes absorbed in Krishna. The big picture is all living entities are parts of Krishna. Prabhupada spoke like this all the time. His intention was the world. His intention wasn't his followers. His intention was the world. The world is, Nat says, the father separated from Arjuna. The world is suffering. Unnecessarily. And what to do to mitigate the suffering, because they don't even know what the suffering is and how to relieve it. So it's the bigger picture is Krishna's at the center, and all things are connected with Krishna. Now, to be a perfect person, you have to know how to connect all things with the source, including Arjuna with his father.
So for my own clarification, as I said, I struggled with it for a long time, that incident. For anyone, doesn't matter, that who felt that literally a father crying in the crowd to kind of stop and start looking for the child, wouldn't that be
work
for Krishna?
Yeah, absolutely. Here's me. Not just the father and the child. What about the child? The father's an adult. The little child is a child. What's the child going through?
Actually, child was playing so much.
He was in the playground.
He didn't miss the parent, but the parents did.
Oh. Okay.
He was
bad.
Happy.
He was happy. He didn't even think that the whole commotion went on without him, but...
Okay, now I feel better.
he's not traumatized.
because this is my perspective. Child protection is so important because adults are adults and adults can handle their emotions, but kids have to be, you can't put kids at risk because, somebody's goofy upstairs in the adult department. You have to be the child. Caring for children is so important. I mean, I'm not a father, but caring for children is so important.
Yeah, I had a talk with the father, actually, because how he left his child in the playground, and he was kind of chatting with his friends or something, and that's all.
There's a rule that says, if you bring a child on, this is ISKCON rule, you can't leave a child unsupervised.
Yeah.
It's a rule. Because it's not just for that kind of thing, but who knows what child might get into or another child might do to another child when there's no adult supervision. You can't let that happen to a child. That's irresponsible parenting. Excuse me.
No, there's no question about that.
But I think sometimes when we are in a mood, that mood, the Krishna's mercy mood, that...
Yeah, well,
it's
so therefore we have a rule that says that's not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
Yeah.
And, I haven't heard it emphasized as much as I have at the Washington Temple, because the temple president, Ananda Vrindavan Dasi, was in charge of the Gurukul in Vrindavan. And she's really heavy. I mean, she's a strong lady. And she's, she confronts people if they don't follow the rule. And if you can't supervise your child, you can't come to the temple. Because in our temple, we don't have unsupervised children. No, because she's really strong, everyone goes, whoa, she's a strong lady, we better supervise her children. Because it's protection. And yes, there is a tendency. No, we're here at the temple and the kids are playing. That's just fine. Okay, playing is fine. Children will play. But they have to be supervised. Because accidents happen. And then everybody's sorry. You shouldn't have accidents that you're sorry about. Just have supervision. I'm sorry I'm going off on it. This is a personal pet peeve. Child protection is really important. You don't want to protect your child, then don't have children. You got to have children to protect your children. And that is responsible parenting. So, enough on that one. The big picture is all living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, and it should be seen in that way, not just spoken in that way, we do something else. That's imperfect. You say one thing and you do something else. There's a big gap between what we know and how we conduct our life. So we have to close the gap. But it doesn't change the reality that everything is part of Krishna. We want to bring everything in connection with the source of everything. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.